Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you could send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Governed by Consent and Court Access and the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Everyone should get involved in our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can click on the link on our front page or on the right-hand side of our website for more information. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on our scripture reading. We're in the book of Ephesians. This week we'll be hearing Ephesians chapter 6, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service, as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven. Neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. And take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints, and for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. But that ye also may know my affairs and how I do, Tychicus, a beloved brother and faithful minister in the Lord, shall make known to you all things, whom I have sent unto you for the same purpose, that ye might know our affairs, and that he might comfort your hearts. Peace be to the brethren, and love with faith, from God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Grace be with all them that love our Lord Jesus Christ in sincerity. Amen. The end of the Epistle of Paul the Apostle to the Ephesians.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight? But you have to unmute yourself.
We do. I was looking to see if Jennifer Harris has checked in yet. She volunteered to give us a brief discussion on what her COS has been doing in California and what Gavin Newsom has been doing. So I guess we'll have to wait and see until she checks in. So we do have some questions for you.
Okay. And if she is out there and we don't see her, maybe she can get into the queue.
Is it open?
Yeah, I got the queue open.
Okay, first question. We have noticed our county government of finance with an affidavit stating that our home is for private use only. It is not a transient residence, which is a commercial listing. Our goal is to put our house completely into the private unincorporated, which means that we would not be paying property tax. We would also like to re-record our warranty deed to put it into the private. Can you recommend any books or websites to read on this topic of placing your home into the private and removing us from their commercial taxable codes? We have already read the Ron Gibson land patent book and took a class from him.
Okay, yeah, I've never looked deeply into it. I do know that, or I've heard anyway, that if you can get to convince them to allow you to place your property as private property, it no longer falls under that category of taxes, but of course I haven't seen that tested yet. There is a book here that we've got. Hey, Gerard, have you ever had a chance to go through this book, Land Patent PDF?
No.
Anyway, what you need to know about land patents. And, you know, you can read through this. This is Ron Gibson. What was the name of the individual that she heard?
Well, this is the one they read, John. It was on our website.
Yeah, that's all I know about it. We did put it up. I know Gerard was going to take a look at that, but I don't know whether he actually has or not. But anybody else that's interested in learning a little bit about that, you can find this book under Education Starts Here, come down to the law, and then over to Court Forms and Process, and you'll find it towards the top, not too far down, just a little bit, a couple inches. So that's all I know. I don't have much knowledge, and we've never really worked on that.
Okay. The next thing is there is a worldwide gathering on May 20th of this year in opposition to our current political situation. It's a fellow by the name of Bacardo Bossi. He's part of this movement known as Australia One and has urged people everywhere in the world to join in this assembly. Is NLA, its members, or any of us planning to partake in this event?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it. I don't know anything about it. So I can't respond to that.
Okay. Then a follow-on question. Well, this may not be any better. Is this surrounding the apparently imminent digital currency scheduled to be implemented in July of this year? The more I hear about it, I am very concerned as I hear other people bring this topic up. What alternatives or recourses do we have that can help us through the interim, because it is kind of hard to escape transacting with money, and how can we later reestablish and reacquire our assets, money and physical property and so forth?
Well, yeah, I've heard a lot about this myself over time. I don't know how far they're going to get into this. They're going to try to do this. There's no doubt about it. It may take effect for a short period of time. I'm not expecting that it should take very long. When did they say that they believe it's going to happen in July?
They want this worldwide gathering on May 20th, and they expect it to be implemented in July, yes.
In July. Yeah, hopefully we're in a different place in July, but I don't know how that's going to work out. We have heard a lot of information over the years about going back to gold and silver to have lawful money again, and that the Fed's going to be taken down. It's unlawful. Income tax is unlawful. But when that plays out, that's just another question, and it's an answer I don't have. Hopefully soon.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah, you're talking about the central bank digital currency?
Yeah, what do you know about
that? Yes.
They don't have enough time. They'll never get it in because it's not even in yet. And even if they do, you don't have to go into it. You just trade outside of it. There will be alternatives. And any money that you have in there, you should be covering it with turning it to a hard asset, to gold or silver. There's companies that'll help you do that. If it's like your IRA or your retirement account, they could do that, because gold and silver are legal tender. They can't tell you that you can't. So There's big companies out there like USA Gold and some of these other ones, you know, Bull Pony, that's what he does, and Golden Hyphen Jackass. These guys all help you get your money in gold and silver. I don't believe that the central bank currency will come in, because if it comes in, it's the end of us. That's the end of America. That's the end of, because they're going to have the digital ID. They're going to know everything you do. They could shut you off in a minute. If that happens, you better, you know, you're going to run to the woods, and it's going to be Mad Max is what it's going
to be. Yeah, it sounds like even if they tried to make it happen, it's going to take a while to really put into effect.
They don't have it even ready. They got all kinds of problems. They're trying real. They're panicking. But
yeah.
They don't even have the technology down pat that they do with the other digital currency, which they've already put in with the BRICS and that. They're not using SWIFT anymore. So they do have a digital currency that they've been working on for years that works, and that's what we're going to end up going to, the same ones that the BRICS are using and the whole world's going to be using eventually. So you just got to pay attention. There are alternatives, and you can stay out of it, especially in the beginning. I wouldn't put any money in the bank if they're not out of the SWIFT system, they won't be a bank. That's the first thing that's going to happen. So I don't think you need to worry about it too much, okay? Because it's all going to go down at the same time.
And everybody should be saving their coins, U.S. coins, because remember, they're guaranteed face value. And it follows inflation. Been following it down for, 70 years?
Right.
And it'll follow it up when it goes, because it's guaranteed.
So that's cheaper than gold and silver if you just buy coins. You know? The trouble is the banks don't want to give them to you unless you have a business, a DBA or whatever. So
most banks may be in that case, but I don't know that all are. I've heard of people getting them, but generally they like to have a business.
Right. I mean, if you go in for $5,000 in coin, they're gonna squeak. You know.
You could buy a box of halves at $500, and that's
right.
The least I've gone at any one time is $500.
And as far as that property tax book goes, I don't know if I looked at that one, but I've looked at a few of them. And ultimately, the property tax is illegal. They do the same thing that they do for income tax. They list your property as commercials. And I extensively researched the New York State real property law. Well, you go in there and read it. It talks about dockage and wharfage and all this stuff. Just like when you looked, John, and they said, oh, you're producing tobacco and alcohol and firearms. That's not you, and your property doesn't have dockage and wharfage. But they put you on the tax roll as a commercial entity. That's how they get away with it. And we let them get away with it. You have to get your assessor to correct it. There's many steps. You've got to know what you're doing. I'm hoping that it all goes away, because it's all fraud anyway.
Well, that's on its way out, too, as soon as things take place. There's no doubt about that. So we might be wasting time going that direction. You could be putting your time in better places, getting better.
I think it's going to go away anyway, because if we go back to constitutional government, tax on property, on private property, on your personal property, it's against the Constitution, because you don't own it then. Then they own it. They're renting it to you. So that's just, you know, it's common sense, common law, common sense. So I would just, not worry about it for now. It is going to go away as far as I can see. If everything else works out, if the dollar goes down and it all goes away and the central bank goes away, we'll be in good shape. They won't be able to tax your land away from you like they can right now. Anyway.
Okay. All right. And anybody wants to get into the queue, there's only one person in the queue right now. But if you're on a phone, it's *6 and 1. But any app, there should be a button there to get into the queue. All right. Next, Jan.
Okay. That's all the questions that I have, John. But I see Jennifer has checked in. She is the Committee of Safety Leader for Solano County in California, and she has an update on what they've been doing and also some comments on what Gavin Newsom's been up to and the massive snow melt expected this spring and how that will affect what he does and so on. So I'll see if I can get her unmuted here. Oh, she moved. Where did she go? Did she jump in the queue?
Looks like I'm seeing it in alphabetical order in, as far as the basic list here.
Looks like it. She might have just dropped out for some reason. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That was my fault. It was not too wrong. It was my fault. Get back here. I'm sorry. Get back into the queue. Meanwhile,
Jennifer did drop out. I don't see her on the list. I guess we'll have to wait till she gets back in.
Okay.
So.
All right. I think
quick reminder, John, for the CBDC, the Central Bank Digital Currency, if you'll go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, and then on the left-hand side, if you go to petitions, and you scroll down, it'll say petition 007, like James Bond, for states violating the Constitution by allowing anything other than gold or silver coin to be used as tender for payment of debt. It's a 26-page First Amendment petition, and this is what GR and people in South Dakota used to shame their representatives from signing this thing again. They were going to push it through after the governor vetoed it. They were going to override the veto. But when it came up for vote again, they were all too embarrassed because the people had put this First Amendment petition in their faces and they were shamed by it. So it's really good. Has a lot of great sources cited. Founding Fathers, Constitution, ratification debates. Check it out. And I did hear an anecdote recently about someone, it wasn't Gibson, but it was another fella who challenged the government, and he had gotten his property off the tax roll. And unfortunately, after he had moved all his stuff in, it caught on fire. The fire department rolled up and said, we can't come out to your property and put out the fire because you're not on our tax rolls.
Really? Boy, that's a lot waiting.
I agree.
So the house went on fire? Did the house totally burn down or what?
Totally burned down. Lost everything he had.
Technically, the town pays for the fire department. So if you're going to take your land off the tax roll, you have to go to the fire department and get a bill for the year. See, I belong to a fire department, and we're a fire protection. We're not part of the town. The town doesn't vote our trustees. We don't have trustees. We're a private corporation, so to speak. So they contract us. The town pays us as a fire protection district. Well, if somebody wasn't in that fire protection district, that means we're not getting paid. Our insurance won't cover us if we get hurt on putting your fire out. So you have to see the fire department, and you've got to pay your due for the year.
Yeah, but then, you know, they have to notify that kind of a knowledge to an individual, number one. Okay, imagine if there were children in the house and they couldn't get out and couldn't get into them, and the fire department doesn't show up, and they burn to death.
Look, it sounds like they put on a deal because the fire department wouldn't know that your land wasn't on a tax roll.
That's a fact too. Yeah.
This was a conspiracy, no doubt about it. Because, you know, our first thing as firemen is to protect lives and property.
That's right.
And it doesn't say property on the tax roll. When you're supposed to put a fire out, no matter what, the insurance companies make sure of that, because we've got two walls standing, they won't pay you for them. So our duty is to put the fire out as soon as we can and save whatever we can, even if it's one wall.
And even more than that, we're human beings. We have a duty as a human being to help our fellow neighbor no matter what. There is
Amen.
No question.
Listen, I think the insurance company actually has a suit against the town and the fire department because they had to insure that home.
And I'd like to say one other thing. I do not believe one penny goes to, well, maybe they do get a piece of the action, okay, but it's not a lawful action because the whole thing is unlawful, all right? And I can't perceive or believe that that things are set around that way connected to property tax. And if it is, that sounds unlawful to me also because, again, property tax is unlawful. You know, as Gerard said, you know, if you have to pay tax and you don't pay it and they take it from you, then you don't own it, do you? You have to keep paying.
Well, wait a minute now. They can give you a tax if for a service.
They can't give you a direct tax. There's got to be a lawful way. And there are plenty of lawful ways.
Right, so it would be a fire protection district. Just like you have a sewer district, that tax only goes on the users of the district. not everybody in the town. Like we have a sewer system in our town that only serves, I don't know, 200 or 300 people. That is only on their tax roll. I can't put it on my tax roll. I'm outside of the sewer district lines. So that's a legal tax because they're giving you a service. You know, no taxation without representation and all that stuff too. So, you know, when they tax your property, what are they giving you? I mean, there is a highway tax. You know what I mean? The highway department does collect taxes, and it gets federal money and all kinds of other money.
Yeah, but the highway tax gets money ultimately. Their taxing system is off your fuel.
Not on a town road. There's no federal excise taxes and all that.
Well, you know I mean? I got to believe that, they're supposed to be getting a piece of the action. I'd be willing to bet they're getting a piece of the action.
Well, actually, you're right, because the federal government does kick in on roads.
Right, because there is a tax, and there's a large tax on gasoline, and especially for trucks, for diesel fuel, there's a large tax on that. And yes, it's got to be spread out, not just on major highways, but even on roads and everything else, because people drive all over the place. They drive on every road, and but the thing is they want more money. That's their problem, and I'm willing to bet you there's plenty of money that comes in from various taxes that are lawful, but they want more because they don't have enough to in their pockets, so they want more.
They charge the truckers extra tax for gas. They hit them with another sticker they got to have on their bumper.
What's that? Trucks?
Commercial, because they're commercial, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you could buy diesel fuel, home oil, which is pretty much diesel fuel. You could buy that a lot cheaper, even if it's expensive anyway. But then you would pay for, diesel fuel.
Yeah,
in fact, I understand they put a color in there or something, don't they?
If they pull you over and you got red fuel in your truck, that's a federal offense.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. You don't want to get caught doing that. I used to get regular undyed fuel, and that had road tax on it. And then because it was for my bulldozer or whatever, they have to give me a reimbursement on the fuel tax. They actually used to do that. If I'm taking in a can, say, well, this is for my bulldozer, it's off road use. I fill out a form, and they reimburse me whatever the tax on the fuel was. So, you know, there are provisions for these things if they want, you know.
Well, absolutely.
Anyway.
Okay, let's go on. It's the same thing as with the income tax. You know, everybody's getting a piece of the action, I'm sure, to a degree. But it's not meant to be that way. And it's more money for them. And, there's plenty of taxes, different kinds of taxes.
With income tax, I know for a fact that this is a good stat, that the federal income tax on personal income goes to cover the interest on our debt, which is illegal. The corporate income tax just so happens to cover our military budget. That's how it's broken down.
And I'm sure they keep get people out of jail with that too, like Black Lives Matter and maybe some other brown shirt groups, you know?
Right. Okay. It doesn't go for any infrastructure. Your income tax pays the interest on the debt. It doesn't pay for highways. It doesn't pay for anything. It pays the England banker. It pays the Queen or whoever it is up there, the Pope, whatever, who's collecting this money, okay? So that's what your income tax is doing, and that's a fact. It doesn't go, and people think that your income tax buys them, you know, nice things. It doesn't buy you anything. It's this fictitious debt. That's why it's a sin, and that's why God called it usury. And this whole fiat system is smoke and mirrors from the devil. And he, look, gold and silver in the Bible were God's money. God recognized gold and silver because it was a stone cast by no man. It wasn't created by a man. It was created by him. And that's legal, lawful money. It always has been since the beginning of time. So that's what we need to get back to, and I think we are going to get back to that. Anyway.
No doubt about that.
Okay,
thank you. All right, anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, because there's only two people there. Okay, we'll take our first person here. Jody, You got the mic. Go right ahead. What state are you in?
Hi, I am from Illinois.
Okay. Jody from Illinois.
Okay, so I was terminated for my employment with the state of Illinois for refusing to wear a mask in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
This was after the governor lifted the mandate, and the secretary of the department that I worked in, she started the mandate immediately after the governor lifted it. So anyway, I was working from home mostly, but I would have to rotate in the office once every like 3 months. And so before I came in, and it was April of 2022 when it started, before I came in April, I let them know that I was not going to wear a mask anymore, and I stated the reasons why. I invoked the Constitution and some laws, and came in on my first day, and I sat in a cubicle with a full plexiglass barrier and between me and the client. We only had to wear a mask when we were with clients. So I was completely separated from them, and it didn't matter to them. So anyway, I was suspended three different times in 2022, and then they finally fired me in November. And I went through the Civil Service Commission, and I just got my final order from them, or the final decision last Friday, which of course it was not in my favor. So I'm going through, I'm filing
some kind of an administrative court that they have going, a hearing, or what was that?
Yeah, it was a hearing through the Civil Service Commission.
Civil Service, yes, their own judges and everything.
Yep, basically. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean,
You have a federal suit there. Well, I would start in the state, because you're not even up to the state. These guys are look, it's a crime against humanity. And eventually we're going to have Nuremberg too, and they're all going to crash and burn.
Yeah.
But right now, I would look up Lee Dundas. She's a lady lawyer. She's wild. You'll love her. Just Google Lee Dundas.
Yeah, you know her?
Well, yeah. She's done suits on masks, and she could probably give you language, but I think you're going to ultimately end up in the federal court, and I think when it finally gets there, it's going to be a slam dunk, because I don't think you're going to be the only one that's there. Anybody that lost their job over it, they're in trouble. They're in trouble, and did they force you to take a shot too, or no?
No.
No.
Luckily, we didn't have to do that, but I'm trying to get. I know I might have to go through the federal court, but I'm still trying to just work with what I have right now, because I went through a lot, and I had like 50 pages of my legal brief. It was 50 pages, and I mean, I had so much.
Did you also copy the OSHA law? Because the OSHA,
well, OSHA
law, wearing masks, they don't follow the OSHA guidelines, and actually they
no, OSHA do. OSHA said they don't have anything to do with the.
I doubt there's anything out there.
I don't care what OSHA says. OSHA has mask guidelines that you're, when you're in an employee in a place, you're supposed to follow those guidelines. Like, you have to change it every so many hours.
That would be under certain situations, Gerard. It wouldn't be under covert. I could not believe that they had anything written anywhere in the books, so to speak, of the laws.
No, it doesn't matter. OSHA has a standard of wearing face masks. That standard is in every.
But not business. Those kind of masks. They said
those N95s. It's all they.
I didn't wear an N95.
Well, yeah, but for what purpose, Gerard? What purpose would they have? You know, there's a certain look at. There are guidelines that require commercial activities. Yeah, well, when you're doing something that requires eye protection, breathing protection, you know, if you're sanding, for instance, sheetrock, I mean, you really want to wear some kind of a mask to prevent yourself from your lungs fill up. And OSHA protects. Hold on, OSHA protects those commercial activities, and there is a requirement, and you have to follow that because it makes sense. But I don't think there's anything out there that OSHA had going where you have to, because someone's got the flu or something, that you got to wear a mask and the guidelines for wearing that mask. I don't think there's anything.
No, you don't understand. You're going way off. The OSHA is the one that tests all these masks and rates them. And what they and it's occupational safety hazard, OSHA.
What's the occupational safety hazard?
Well, when your boss tells you you have to wear a mask, and then he doesn't let you change it every 2 hours, that's the safety hazard right there.
Well,
OSHA says that needs to be changed every 2 hours.
Again, if there's a requirement to wear the mask for something, an activity, and they have to define that activity, it's not a blanket thing. The government does nothing without having the authority to do it in some regulation, some code, some statute, or something. The point is look at it. As a contractor, when I was constructing as a contractor or construction management, there are certain dangers of breathing things in. There's asbestos. The sand, you know, when you're sanding or even sanding floors, wooden floors. I mean, all of this creates a health hazard, and OSHA makes the regulations to protect the workers, rightly so. That's their job.
I'm going to research this, and doctors wear masks when they're operating.
That's okay, but I want to see where it says when there's the flu season coming around, you're going to wear a mask.
This has got nothing to do with the
flu season. They didn't have anything to do with the kind of mask.
You have to wear a mask, and it needs to be a cloth or this one or that one. OSHA has standards on what that does and how often.
It has to also define the job, whatever the job requirement is that's causing the potential hazard that the person is being protected from. Okay, there's nothing on the books. They have nothing to stand on. Is my point? Nothing. Yeah.
John, OSHA has regulations. Like, for example, if you're forced to wear a mask because of particulates and that sort of thing, you can't wear it more than so many hours, like 4 hours.
Right. I understand.
And when they want you to wear it for 8 hours, it's against the OSHA regulations, no matter why you're wearing it.
Well, that might be helpful to a degree, but the point.
They have standards on masks, and they are the premier experts. And if the CDC is not going to follow the OSHA standards, then what standards are they following? The CDC cannot say, just wear a mask, wear it all day.
The CDC can't tell anyone to do anything.
Well, I know they're not a government, but they do.
I understand, but the point
is the employers enforce it.
I think we're missing the points of each other, okay? I understand your point that there is a guideline for wearing a mask. The point is she doesn't have to wear a mask, period. If she has to wear a mask for COVID, maybe she's got to wear a mask because someone in the building has a cold. You know, come on, it's crazy. We all know that's crazy.
Well,
a 95 mask, right, that's the other thing. 95 mask isn't even going to work. You're right. So even though there is a guidelines, the point is that there's no job requirement for that particular situation where they and even if they would be insane if it was, it'd be a problem though, because it'll be another uphill battle because they have a code to use against you, because that's how they operate with codes. And so anyway, I don't see any way that even OSHA.
I think even on those masks, they tell you that it does not filter out viruses.
Right.
It doesn't work for that.
Right. Of course.
So I would use that in a lawsuit. I don't care what they got. I say, look at here's the evidence. Here's this mask. Here's what the science says. It says it doesn't work. And then they tell me I have to do it, and they're going to fire me.
And a mask could make her sick.
That's right.
Okay.
But go ahead, Jody. What else do you have to say about that?
Yeah. Okay. So. Now, one of my arguments was that it was a violation of Title VII because I told them in emails before I didn't wear the mask that it was against my sincerely held religious beliefs and conscience to wear the mask. So, you know, I even made the attempt myself by sitting in that cubicle with a full barrier and walls surrounding me to accommodate myself because they would not give me an accommodation. The only accommodation that they offered me was to fill out one for a medical disability. Well, I don't have a medical disability, so they were just going to deny it.
Well, you bought it if you wear a mask too much.
Right. So they argued, oh, well, that doesn't have anything to do with us because that's out of their jurisdiction, Title VII. So here's my thing is, how do I get this judge through the circuit court doing my administrative review? How do I get them to realize this order was unlawful?
Show me the law.
What's that?
Show me the law. Show me the regulation. Show me the law. They don't have one. Show me the regulation. Exactly. Show me the law.
Their argument is, well, this is your employer, so they can do what they want. And it's like, I'm giving you all the laws that say that you can't do this to me, and yet they just ignore me. And I also said it was a breach of contract, and it was an unconscionable covenant that they added without giving me an offer for compensation with it. And the judge, he just basically ignored everything. So in my
did they come to a settled point and make a
no? They offered me nothing. No.
No, I don't mean that way. I mean, did they make a decision? Are you still going to court?
Oh, the decision was that I was fired. Yes, they had cause for firing me because I refused to follow an order.
Yeah, the question becomes: did they write down the cause?
Refusing to follow an order.
What order? What regulation? Let's get back just to the legal side of things. What regulation did you violate? That's the question you have for them. What regulation did you violate? What order did they give that there's a regulation? Because, you see, they can't give an order without a regulation. And that's the purpose of statutes and regulations and codes. It lays out how things work and what the requirements are and to some degree what penalties could possibly be.
So they just went by the DHS handbook that says you have to follow an order.
That's a handbook. That's a handbook. That doesn't mean that's just the Gestapo pushing it to the limits.
Yeah.
And people believe, and that's that, you know.
Reality
is the way one perceives it. And people believe a lot of things that's fiction. They believe a lot of things that just is not so. It's all de facto. I mean, we're a democracy because people believe we're a democracy. And as long as the people in the minds of the people believe we're a democracy, then we're going to be a democracy. And we will suffer consequences of that. So until the people are ignorant, that's the and they made us ignorant. And we went along with it. We didn't step up to take care of our own knowledge that we should, you know, things that we should be learning and so on and so forth. Hopefully people are waking up and it's time to step up and do what they got to do. But going back to your case, here is the bottom line. No, they can't tell you or require you to do anything that isn't in the regulations or is in the law. There is no regulation. There is no law. Congress never got together and created anything. You're in a federal level. You're not on the state level, right? Or you're at a federal level, right?
State of Illinois. Yeah.
Okay, so you're on a state level. It's a state job then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame you didn't realize in the court because you could have held the judge's feet to the fire just to get him on the record, you know, or the other side really is what you hold him to the fire. I'm sure there was some kind of a prosecutor or something, whatever they call them.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah, the Assistant Attorney General. But I did try to hold his feet to the fire because I also argued 21 U.S.C. 360 BBB, which is for EUA products, that they have to give informed consent and give you the right to refuse, and that's without a penalty. So he totally disregarded it.
Okay. You can move it into state court, and it shouldn't cost you anything to move it into state court. You know, when you go into federal court or state court in the sense for the state issue, but you go into federal court, And you're playing ball on the lower level, they require you to go through all of the different processes before you come to see us. That's the federal judiciary. Same thing on the state level. I had a problem with, and I never should have followed a lawyer's, suggestion, but I had a problem with unemployment, the people from the unemployment office. And I went through all of their administrative processes. I went in and argued with the people. I argued with the judge. And they called me point straight out that, hey, the Constitution doesn't apply here. They actually said that. And, And, you know, I did talk with a lawyer about this, and he came in and represented me in one of the hearings. I mean, he didn't get anywhere either. Even the case, he brought cases up, and the other side ignored it, and the judge didn't care. But the bottom line was, the lawyer gave me the advice, hey, go through the administrative process and go through that, and if you fail, you can then take it into the federal court. Well, what he failed to tell me that if I lost, I'd have to give them the money before the court would hear my case. So they wanted a whole bunch of money, and they weren't going to get it, and they still didn't get it to this day. I found out that process was a paper tiger. And it was in my days of ignorance, but as far as the law is concerned. The thing is this, they can do nothing. Look at, they couldn't, the federal government didn't have the authority, and I don't know if they did before they got the authority, but they didn't have the authority to call a jury in the federal courts until the 70s, 1970s, the early 70s. And that's when they put the legislation given the U.S. attorney the ability to call a jury in order to bring a case against an individual. And so they can't do anything without some kind of code. And they can't apply anything on anybody without a regulation, because in the case of working, usually it's regulations. So, and they don't have it. So that's where you can win. You might be able to make certain positions, as Gerard's bringing up, but the strong position, ultimately, is the fact that show me the law. Show me the regulation. I didn't break. You can't give me an order to do something that's not in there.
Well, yeah. What frosts me is the fact that they say you have to follow an order. Well, that what? If they tell you to jump off the roof, you got to do that.
This still has to be defined. You have to follow an order of a regulation.
Regulation. You just said that.
Yeah, that's the point. The law is constructive. So that didn't even apply to her.
And there were laws that they were supposed to be following, too, which is the Title VII law, you know, that says that you're supposed to give a reasonable accommodation, and if there is no undue burden on them, then they have to give me an accommodation. Well, the barriers were already there, so there was no undue burden to them. It was already available. They just weren't accepting it as an alternative to
the other thing, I don't know how it was written in your state, because the other thing in my state here, New York State, they can tolerate it, okay? So if you can't tolerate a mask, I mean, I couldn't tolerate the mask more than a couple of minutes, 5 minutes, and it just affects my breathing, and I'm not wearing it because of that, ultimately, anyway. But, everywhere I went, I had a problem. Sometimes I comply just because I was going to be in a store for a few minutes, an hour or something, you know. Maybe I don't want to go through the hassle. But generally speaking, and again, you know, that, is there some kind of a wording in there that if you can tolerate the mask? You should go back and look for that, because that's another way.
They have people that have medical exemptions, and they don't follow them either.
Not at all.
No, they deny everybody.
Don't beat them over the head. And you know, look, this is the problem that needs to be straightened out now. Now that we live through this, now is the time for us to fix this.
Yeah, I would take it into the courts, and here's the thing. You know, you move it into the state court for cause, because, that's your next step. It's the appeal system. And you make your case and the point of the matter. And then they got to give you everything back. And I'd also go for pain and suffering. You know, you not just didn't get your paycheck and you couldn't work, but you were injured because a lot of other things happened because you don't have the money. And I don't know what damages you suffered on that, but nevertheless, it's a damage. Stress, I mean, there's all kinds of damages here. So you can go in for pain and suffering. You can go in for the money lost. Now, if you lose in the state court for some one reason or another, it's a strong possibility because they all work together doing crazy things, then you file for an appeal, okay, to move up the line. All right, you appeal it up the line. And then you take your time on it, because as far as the appeal is concerned, you're going to want to wait until we get to the other side of things, you know, the other side of devolution, because that's when the courts, I think, will start to, you'll be able to get justice in the courts, and it may be slow in returning, but it will return, you know. Yeah. But anyway, that's what you should do, is appeal it into the state court now.
John,
so,
what
yeah,
state,
I already, what I state, just filed. Sorry.
What state are you from?
Illinois.
Yeah, there was one. I just read an article that said 3 days ago, I think, that administrative judge said that everyone fired for it. All the state workers had to be paid with back pay with interest.
That was Chicago workers.
Well, it doesn't matter. It works for you, too.
Right. Well, I'm going through a different court. I'm going through Sangamon County. But there was a judge there, and I'm hoping that I get her. She's the one that got the masks off the kids in the schools back in February of 2022, which is when the governor lifted the mandate and everything, because he got schooled in court and everything. So that's
well, remember, that decision made is still part of the full faith and credit, which is under Article 4.
Unfortunately, after that happened, they appealed that decision, and in the Supreme Court, it was reversed, or not reversed, but, you know, because...
Well, that case was reversed?
Well, the way that they argued it was wrong. They were saying it was a violation of the Illinois Public Health Act. So the lawyer, that's the only thing that he argued, and then it ended up that the judge interpreted it wrong. But she still was very favorable. She said that it was evil that they were mandating these masks for over 2 years, and so I definitely do want her. But okay, so here's my question. So I just filed my petition for the administrative review today, and I'm going to be filing a brief. And so how to get this judge to recognize the order part of it, that it's unlawful, should I ask for declaratory judgment, or how do I?
Well, you mean how to write the paper and what form the paper would follow? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like should I just state it a certain way in my brief or do something separate like that?
Well, look, basically, we want to start with the position that there was no regulation requiring anything like that, number one, and build that part. That's really your basis of your case, because they can't require you to do something outside. Now, there was something brought up about the health department, but this whole thing doesn't stop anything. That whole thing was a fraud, and there's plenty of studies out there. Maybe Gerard has some because he's followed up on a lot of that. Maybe he knows some place where you can get some information that the whole thing was a fraud. You know, the health department can't require you to do something that is stupid and just doesn't work, because those masks don't work for anything, or it doesn't help you at all, because the virus,
well,
or whatever it's called.
My point is that the OSHA guidelines say that it doesn't prevent viruses.
Yeah, well, there you go.
In their guidelines.
So
one of my
hold on, listen. Just make a note on that, what he just said, because you want to have that in your brief. Anything you can use as evidence. Any study out there that shows that no mask is going to stop a virus. In order to stop a virus, you need a respirator. Okay? So you have to find those things and bring them together. But the main thing is this. Here's the main thing. They're requiring you to obey an order with no regulation. If there's no regulation, how do you obey the order? How can you define it? I mean, they can tell you, like Gerard said, jump off a bridge, you know? So what you said?
Did you say jump
off a bridge? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think
if they tell you jump off the bridge, that's not a lawful order.
Yeah.
Now, I like to mention Nuremberg all the time, even if you don't think it applies, because in Nuremberg, the soldiers that followed the order to shoot unarmed prisoners that were in prison, they said, well, we were following orders. And they said, well, that was an unlawful order, and they hung them. And I would put that in there because that gets the judge upset.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It works tonight. I say, listen, even in Nuremberg, they followed unlawful orders and they got hung. Well, this is a human, because they said that's a human rights violation. You don't.
I did put that in my emails all the way back in March of 2022.
Put it also in there that the OSHA guidelines even say that they don't work. You want me to do something that these scientists, the government scientists, says it doesn't prevent a virus, and that's stupid, and that's actually, it's bad. It's because it can get you sick, actually. You know what I mean? So it's even more than stupid.
Yeah, the administrative judge, he wouldn't even let me argue the mask efficacy. He told me, well, let's not even talk about it. Which really, let's look at a full
You need to prevent that from happening, because they'll do the same thing in court with you. You have to get it on your paper, and the other side has to rebut it. And so you want to get everything on paper.
But when you're looking at it, though, I mean, I did argue, this is arbitrary, capricious, and illogical, too, because if you're sitting behind a plexiglass barrier, how is that any less protective than a mask that a person has to wear, you know, properly for it to actually work? So the barrier is a very big, sound barrier. So why, it doesn't make any sense that they wouldn't allow
that. How come you need a mask when you're standing up in a restaurant, but when you're sitting down, you don't?
It's all silliness. I got another one for her, by the way. John, your 5-minute remark made me think of something that I read recently. The article is possible toxicity of chronic carbon dioxide exposure associated with face mask use, particularly in pregnant women, children, and adolescents. A scoping review. It says fresh air has around 0.04% CO2 while wearing masks more than 5 minutes bears a possible chronic exposure to carbon dioxide of 1.41% to 3.2% of the inhaled air. And then what it says is there is circumstantial evidence that popular mask use may be related to current observations of a significant rise of 28 to 33% in stillbirths worldwide and a reduced verbal, motor, and overall cognitive performance of 2 full standard deviations in scores in children born during the pandemic, as well as mammals who were chronically exposed to 0.3% CO2. The experimental data demonstrate a teratogenicity with irreversible neuron damage in the offspring.
Slam dunk. You got it right there. How did she find that? Tell Jody how to.
Yeah, I've seen that all over the place on Telegram.
You have to be able to quote where it comes from. You know, can't put words down. This is what this says or that says. You know, you have to have authorities.
Since I didn't argue that in my
No, it doesn't matter. Look at. First of all, you're not a lawyer, okay? Second of all, you weren't in a court of law. You were in an administrative hearing, all right? Now you're going into a court of law. So now you want to bring when you get to trial, anything you don't put in, you're not going to be able to bring up. And if you should have known it beforehand, if you say, well, I just discovered it, if they could prove that you should have known beforehand, then that's not coming in. So, but it doesn't have anything to do there. Your argument, they may try to say that because they're snakes, and your response to that is, A, I'm not a lawyer. B, I thought they'd do the right thing. So now I have to study, and now I'm studying, and I realize what has to be done now. But C, that's not a court of law. We're in a court of law right now. Now it applies. So let's get moving on that. But
even though
all these points that you've heard, don't just stick with one point. You know.
No, I'm not. I have like 7 different arguments that I made. Okay. They just ignored everything.
Well,
like,
that's okay that they ignored it. But did you have the one that Eric just brought up here?
He told me I couldn't talk about the mask efficacy, so I didn't talk about that. But here's the other thing.
Whoa. No, I understand that you're talking. The judge wouldn't let you talk about these things. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But I'm not talking about that at that point. I'm talking about now. Okay, now you want to get it on the paper. Let them deny your paper and say you can't say that. They won't do that, okay? They'll never do that. Shame on them if they do that, and that's just going to show the ignorance of that individual. These are administrative judges and real judges, and not that they're real judges anyway, but judges in the court system, you know, realize the administrative courts, they don't know anything about the law at all. All they know is the regulations by which they operate, and they abuse them. Abuse is proven right there in the fact that they say, well, you're required to obey an order. Well, that's fine. There must be regulations for those orders. They can't just make them up And that's another position you want to make, okay? But I like what Eric brought up. That's powerful. That's extremely powerful. You're putting my, you know, my life in jeopardy, my health in jeopardy, and who knows? Maybe during that time I was pregnant and didn't even realize it. Yeah.
And the other thing is the equal protection. I mean, the only people that had to wear the mask are the people that have to see clients. So that's only one job category. All the other people in the office didn't have to wear a mask. So
yeah,
it was,
but that was not a written regulation, was it?
No, but I'm just saying it wasn't equal protection because we were being discriminated against based on our job title. And the people that work in the schools, they didn't have to wear a mask. Those are state employees. The people that work for Department of Motor Vehicles, they didn't have to wear a mask. And they see like 500 more clients a day than we saw. We hardly saw any because we were mostly phone interviews and stuff.
Well, I think you have a lot of ammo. I think you have a lot of... But I'll tell you what, you're going to win anyway. Even if you don't do anything, I strongly believe this, because they're going to be seizing trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in assets and all kinds of things, and has to be sold off. So the people are going to benefit from it, and other businesses are going to build upon the businesses that they've taken away from these people once we bring them to justice. And so what are they going to do with all that money? Well, justice says, well, you know, where did they get that money from in the first place? They got it from me. They got it from you. They got it from our parents. They got it from even our grandparents. And they got it from our children. They got it from, it belongs to us. We have to be restored. And we're all, been injured ultimately. So everyone is, this, I can already see getting on the other side, and then this will zoom up the economy real quick. Right off the bat, people are getting written, checks to put into their accounts or whatever the case they may be. And I'm not talking anything small here. But then there's damages beyond that you can have a lawsuit for. We have to be careful, though, because they may limit it and say, well, if you take this money and you sign this paper, then you can't come back for anything else. And if that's the case, I wouldn't take a dime, me personally, because I got all kinds of things in my mind that I'm going for. You got to get the damages. For every injury, there must be a remedy. That's a common law maxim, and it's a requirement. So we're all, every single one of us is a casualty of war, because we've been at war since the day we were born. This goes back, a long, long time. And you'd have to be over 100 to get to a point maybe when, and even then, look at the assault upon us started even before we became states. It goes all the way back into the colonies. It's the New World Order movement. And then, of course, the deep state developed eventually here and in many, many other countries. So, but anyway, I think you got a strong case. I think you just pursue it the way you're thinking. Are you in the law course?
Yes.
Okay, well, then you're going to have a lot of knowledge to really work this out.
Yes, hopefully. And I also tried to argue that she retaliated against me, the secretary, because I told her that she was violating laws. And then...
Well, that's the other thing. When in your lawsuit, when you move it, you not only want to, argue the case, I think you should sue the individuals. Okay, go right up the line, right up there to the authority. You know, when with the IRS, when I sue the IRS, I always go after the agent, but I also go after the commissioner, because they're working under him. He's responsible, and we know that he knows what's going on, because he teaches those people that. Well, not him directly, but down the line, and he approves it, and they're working off other things that other people are telling them to do, but whatever that case may be. So again, you could sue the people individually also in the same case.
That was my intention. Well, because back in March in 2022, when I said I wasn't going to wear the mask, I said if they retaliated against me, I was going to sue them personally, because taxpayers should not have to pay anything to represent them, and they shouldn't have to pay me for an award. There's just more. I'll call another time, because I have even more.
Well, you get back in line. There's only a few people in line. We'll probably get right back around to you. You know, we were just working off of punitive damages here, and there is punitive damages also here. So you got to think about that. And there's punitive damages against the individual. And you can make, in my opinion, you know, and again, you know, I think this is a strong case that you could make against the individuals, is the fact that, look, this has been the problem of the world. Because people's ignorance, they follow along and they damage other people because of their ignorance. And therefore, you know, by getting punitive, by saying, hey, look, I need to get punitive damages because people need to be taught a lesson. Because in the future, when we go through silly things like this again, this is a case that hopefully people will remember and keep them out of trouble and stop us from being taken over by a communist movement. You know, I'd have to think about how I'd write that all up, but generally that's kind of the gist.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, I might be getting back in line. So to talk about the other stuff, we'll see. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll take on next caller now. Thank you. Let me put that. Okay, next question. Let's see who's got the mic. 954.
What's up, John?
Oh, how you doing? Andromeda, huh?
Yeah, what are you talking about? All right, that's what I'm saying. What an honor. He actually knows what it is. All right, so check this out. Okay, I just wanted to point out some. I heard you ask on your, I think it was the last Monday night call, so I want to make sure I understood. Because I want to clarify something to you in case I'm not sure if you knew this. You asked for you said you were looking for both a paralegal, and then you said you were looking for a researcher. All right.
We had a meeting recently, and anybody else that wants to volunteer, they can volunteer in. Just send a message to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. Tell them.
Wait, you don't know what I wanted to make clear.
Okay. You know, but I want to take the opportunity, since you brought it up, for other people that they want to jump in. And you, if you want to jump in, anybody that wants to volunteer some work with National Liberty Alliance, just send a letter to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org and let it be known what you'd like to help out in. And there is a help page, but if let me go to that help page real quick. Let's see, help, that should be underneath. Where did I put that? Under welcome here. Yeah, help wanted. So we have a help wanted here page, and these are the kind of things we're looking for: people to do research, people to represent us. But hold on. Let me just get this out to the rest of the people. It's an opportunity. And but if there's something that's not here that you think NLA should be doing and could be helpful for us, then you can bring that up and say, I'd like to do that too. So if you want to help, we don't have enough people helping yet. And also, when the people who are coming in and volunteering their time, because it is voluntary, at some point in time, once we hit critical mass, or maybe if someone realizes the work we're doing that has deep pockets and wants to give us a lot of money, at some point we will go professional. So we will be paying people to do things because we have to get to that point. But go back to you, Andromeda.
Well, what I wanted to say was, I don't know if you're aware of this, because I wasn't sure of the research you were talking about, but just in case, a paralegal, I don't know if you know, you may already know. Now, remember, I worked in the legal for a long time, although fictional, but I still worked in it. So, you know, a paralegal is, if you were talking about research in law, that's the paralegal's job. If that's what you're talking about, you don't need a researcher and a paralegal. That is their job when it comes to what they do. It's the paralegal that actually prepares and does all of the research for an attorney. A lot of people don't know that, who never went to school for this thing or anything like that. But they're the ones who do all the research. Now, some attorneys don't make that much or smaller, they just do it themselves. But generally, most of them do it that work for either a firm, or they often sometimes contract a paralegal. That's what they do. Also, paralegals, which I guess you know too, you know, they're registered with the bar too. And under the bar rules, They are not, some of them have their own practice, but they must be registered, in other words, under the supervision of an attorney under the bar rules. So I guess you do know when you do get one, even if she went to school to be a paralegal, you know, you have to explain to her that she has to leave the bar because otherwise, out of practice and ignorance and the fear of the rules, they'll think they need their permission to do this and that. But that's one of the main things I want you need to know is that the paralegal is the one that does all of the research, and they're the ones that actually prepare the cases for the attorney.
Right. No, I appreciate that. Yeah. I didn't realize, I didn't think about that, that the bar associated. But setting that aside, some of the research is not necessarily law, it's history. But to a degree, like, for instance, we need to research certain information concerning sheriffs where there are none. Why is there no sheriff? Let's look back into history. That may bring us, of course, into law to some degree because, for instance, in Connecticut, they used a referendum in order to get rid of the sheriffs there. But basically getting knowledge of the history of what took place, is that's a lot of what we've been doing. As far as researching law, yeah, that might come up too, but I'm not sure how much of that. But it's interesting point you bring up about that these people are registered with the bar.
I know this from being in the field because of going to school. You know, as a legal secretary, I deal with this.
Well, let me ask you a question. You may have the answer to this. Let's say they are registered with the bar. So if they're registered with the bar, they're paying the dues. And if they stop paying their dues for a couple of years, let's say, and then 3 years later or 2 years later they wanted to go back and reestablish themselves with the bar, could they do that just by picking up where they left off paying the dues or no?
Yeah, they can. Yeah, they can, as long as they're in what's called under the same rules as attorneys in good standing. With the bar, they pretend to have that rule, just like whatever. But anybody's in good standing with them, well, no matter what they do, except certain states, okay? Most of them, whatever they do is all right with the bar, okay? So, yes, to answer your question, they can leave, and they can come back and pick up where they left off.
Well, that's important to know, but I'd like to say something. I have a dream, okay? And my dream is that there are no bar attorneys on the other side of things, and I'm going to do everything I can to make that happen.
No, there's no such thing as, in other words, you know, I know all about the bar, and I have, you know, not tens, one of many times, you know, especially after coming over to the right side of law, okay, but I'm saying is they'll pretend about, you know, if you look them up about this rule and this thing and this and this and that, just like, you know, they have the form out there where you can make complaints against an attorney, but you know, it's just to make it look good. Most don't, especially in the South. Now, you got one, the only state I know.
Well, you know, there is one other thing also. You know, if a paralegal is working with us here, we're not under the civil law. We're not looking into the civil law.
What I was going to tell you is you'll have to require. I'm letting you know off the bat because she won't know. They think like attorneys do. I had a very good friend who used to consult with me back and forth about law, and she's a paralegal, and I'm saying I had to tell her about certain things too. She's going to do this, this and that because. If they work for the law firm, they're already in there. But even if they are independent, because they can have their own practice, they still have to somehow show registration under the supervision of an attorney. All right? Now, what I'm saying is when you do get one, is what I'm saying, you're going to have to let them know that not only are they going to have to learn common law, they have to leave. But they can come back later. But because the bar is how they are, you know, they're still not going to change their rules for the paralegals practicing that which is truth. And if that person tries that, then they'll give them hell. All right. Plus the attorney can report them too, just like judges threaten attorneys.
You've given me a lot to think about here, and off the top of my head, you know, anything we're doing, I wouldn't have a paralegal doing anything that would actually put them into the courtroom or them behind what we're doing into the courtroom. That's number one.
No, they're not. I didn't mean they're allowed to go into the courtroom. I didn't mean that. When I said they're allowed to practice law, no, they can't. They have a limitation. They can't go in and talk for people. They cannot. But.
But you know, just so you know, my thinking here, they can't practice civil law without their membership in the
right.
bar. That works.
Yeah.
But common law.
I'm saying under the bar rules, they can have their own practice, but that doesn't mean they can't do exactly what an attorney does. They can do everything except go in and talk and represent people, but they can file cases, which usually they get someone to sign a power of attorney for that, for their own safety. They can file things, and they can prepare things, and they advise people, everything except that an attorney does, except go in and stand up and speak for someone.
But any work that they do, that's really kind of behind the scenes working with the lawyers, correct?
Yes.
Generally.
In other words, attorneys, all the work that they do, they hide from the public that they don't do their own. They don't. Unless they're solo and don't have that much money, okay, that they do their own. Generally, that's not the case. It's the paralegal that does all their work for them and prepares the case for them. Then the paralegal also can have their own practice, but they have to show the bar they're affiliated under some type of supervision with an attorney. In other words, there are several that have their own office.
So it's incumbent, but it's incumbent, and this is a question, it's incumbent upon the attorney to make sure that individual who's a paralegal is bar paralegal, number one, and also up to date, who's number two. So the report really comes from that individual in. But if whatever work they're doing, let's say whatever work they're doing for us, and we're not asking...
You'll need to make it clear they have to leave the bar. Otherwise, you're going to have a problem.
I'm going to look. I would agree.
They're not getting paid. What about the fact that they're not getting paid?
They don't need to. Let me just say this. They don't have to tell the bar why, the real reason why, because they'll just hold it against them. It could be anything, a family emergency or anything. I'm not working right now. And as long as they're not working in that field, the bar cannot trace them anyway. If they're not working in the fiction field.
Our real need for a paralegal, generally speaking, comes down to I have to have at some point in time. I mean, we can use paralegals now to get some understanding and things, and some assistance. And I don't know how much I would push.
You got to break that down to
But I don't. I don't. Yeah, I don't. I don't know how much I would push that on an individual that's assisting us at a distance and really is really doing a lot of other things more than just writing any papers. Or doing any law research, but as far as an individual, because I definitely have to hire a paralegal once we get an office. I have to hire a paralegal and a secretary, and at that point, then I'd have to require for sure, because that person would leave the bar. I think that's the way I would lean.
You have to. Otherwise, you're going to have a problem, and that person's going to have a problem.
The other side of that coin is that next year, hopefully, we'll be well into a new republic again, back to the republic, and we wouldn't have to worry about it.
Right. So what you need to know is if I know you haven't thought about this, but they need to force bars to leave the attorneys to leave the bar. What you need to understand is, in the same nutshell. You may have to do an amendment or supplement, rather, to your mandamus, saying also that you require paralegals to leave the bar because you can't leave them there. The bar, although you need to destroy it anyway, but until you do, you need to actually do that because they're practicing just as much as attorneys. They do a lot. Just letting you know.
Yeah, and they would try to come out after me for practicing law, too, but I'm not practicing civil law, and that would be my argument. Not that it would stand for these people because they're insane anyway, but nevertheless.
No, I'm saying do an amendment requiring paralegals to leave. You need everyone to leave.
I understand. I understand that.
It's not just attorneys and judges. It's paralegals. You have several paralegals to one attorney. You can have like three working for one attorney.
I do understand what you're saying. You've opened a door that I haven't thought about before, and I'm going to start giving that some thought and look a little into that. So I'll come to
All you need is a supplement. All you need is a supplement. You know, saying requiring not just attorneys and judges, but paralegals must do it too. Otherwise, you can't leave them out.
I don't understand what you're saying. What do you mean I need a supplement?
What I mean is, if you want to the mandamus you've already filed in the Supreme Court, you need to do a supplement, meaning adding, amending by adding, all right, that the paralegals, not just judges and attorneys must leave the bar, the paralegals must do it too.
Because I wouldn't.
They're in, they do just as much damage.
Yeah, I would not. I would not use a paralegal to assist in the writing. I might use a paralegal to eat their mind to some of the things and knowledge they know and procedures that maybe I'm rusty or don't really realize or something of that nature.
Okay.
But I definitely wouldn't.
All right, well, many of them do know.
Because I would be teaching them the common law, and they'd be practicing something different, you know? So, but yeah, I see the problem here, and I see something I have to. So.
Because a lot of people use them who cannot afford attorneys, because many of them can do a lot of things, okay, as much without having gone to bar stool, I call it, bar stool. as long as attorneys, but they know almost like about, I'd
you're
going to
be in a bar, you better be in a stool.
That's right.
Yeah, I call it bar stool. For example, it was a paralegal because a lot of people use them because they're cheaper, all right? And I know I'm saying they're able to do practices for a cheaper price than attorneys. A lot of things that people need that they can just do without paying an attorney a lot of money, as long as that person doesn't ask for representation. The paralegals do it, and that's how they get over, because it costs less for people, and a lot of people use them for that reason, because they know about maybe 90% of what an attorney does, and they know everything when it comes to preparing documents, okay, and a lot of people use them,
and they're independent. I got an attorney here that if her paralegal can do the work, she charges less. In other words, she gets, like, let's say, $150 an hour. If her paralegal she'll do it for, like, $80 an hour. As long as her paralegal do it.
Yes, you do have some attorneys that will share, kind of like doctors, some of them share their workload with physician assistants and nurse practitioners, similar, because they can have their own practice as well, right. But they need to be affiliated with a doctor. Well, same way, there are attorneys that share their work with a paralegal and may not be using that paralegal in that capacity. They just may be sharing the billing.
Yeah, but that's an interesting point. That's an interesting point when you think about this and go back, because there's a fraud involved here. Because let's say when a lawyer bills you at $300 an hour and he's researching, he or she is researching, you know, 20 hours of research, but he had the paralegal do the research and he's charging you $300 an hour for the research, that's a fraud.
Likely
that's
he didn't
crime.
Do it. That's
not
that's
really.
True. Because I'm telling you.
Oh,
look,
yeah.
If I hire a mechanic and I pay him $20 an hour, when you come to me, guess what? You're paying me $80.
Well, you're paying for the mechanic, though. But generally, and look at a person who, I'd have to think this out a little, but I'd still see a problem there. You do have to tap extra money on top of an individual doing a job. But look at, when you're doing a mechanical work, you have a mechanic there. If the mechanic has a certain knowledge and an ability, they're a mechanic. And, you know, they may lack and they need supervision and have problems where their knowledge is limited. But that doesn't change the fact that it's the man hour. And right now, I think it's about $125 an hour mechanics are charging. Is that what's going rate?
Many of them have assistants under them, you know.
Yeah,
they have on payroll.
Gerard, $125? Is that what the mechanic's going for?
Not
okay. Anyway, I see a problem here with the billing situation, because look, if he's charging $300 an hour for his time, that's one thing. But if a paralegal coming in and he's paying that paralegal $80 an hour, let's say, I don't know what he'd be paying him, but let's say $80 an hour, then you have overhead and certain things and 10% mm-hmm. or 50% on top of that. That's all understandable because that's how business works. There's profit. And mm-hmm. and it's also there's overhead cost and so on and so forth. But the point is, yeah. let's say for a paralegal, maybe they should only be charging $150 an hour for that kind of research.
Right.
The point is I never thought about that. And that is mm-hmm. fraud, and they're doing it all over the place.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just letting you know, what's going on in the background, because I didn't know if you really understood. And then because I heard you mention research, I wanted to understand which research, because if you were talking about help with research in law and cases and stuff like that, you don't need a separate research. They do. That is what they do. That's what they're trained to do. All right. The only difference in them and a legal secretary like myself is we don't do that part. We don't do research. All right. And we don't prepare cases. But we type up, zillions and zillions of documents. Eventually, when you've done it so long and every day, you do learn to structure. That's how I learned to structure. Originally, you learn to structure. All right, documents, the format, the style of action, and you understand legal terminology, and wherefore, the body of a, whatever like that. You know this already, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which I was into before getting into the real, actual yeah. common law. You automatically going to learn. So they prepare the documents that the attorney drafts, or they might do it from the paralegal too. He may draft and he may add it and go back and the secretary does that. Legal secretary does that.
I really appreciate you bringing this up, yeah. and I'm going to look into it. Mm. I feel there's a presence behind me pushing me along.
I see. So, oh, okay.
So if you want to get back into the queue, you can get back in on the end. Because there are people here in the 10:30.
Yeah, well.
But hey, I really appreciate this. I got to look into this and think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you really do need to do that that supplement.
Where's all that noise coming from?
Say, huh?
Is that coming from your mic? There's a lot of noise out there.
No, that's not me.
John, it's time to move on.
Yeah, I'm just saying, but please consider adding that all three of them must leave the bar. If you get all the attorneys and the judges out and you still got the paralegals, then what have you done?
Oh, well, no, the bar has to close down. I mean, that's the problem. Okay, I got to move on. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, let us take on. Yes.
We've got Jennifer here now.
Okay, unmute her and we'll go from there. Let me just move on to the next person here for a second. Hang on. Oh, goodness, what happened?
No.
I just kicked someone out accidentally. Okay, pop back in. You'll be the next person up. Good, unmute Jennifer.
Jennifer, can you quiet down the people in the background there?
Yeah, they definitely got to do that because I can't. There's a lot of noise coming through here.
Jennifer, can you hear us? Jennifer, can you hear us?
Jennifer, can you hear us?
No.
We're going to have to move on. Maybe when it quiets down there, we can unmute her again. Okay, we'll take Jay. Sorry for kicking you out. It's Gerard's fault. Trust me. You got the mic.
No, it wasn't. I was texting Gerard.
I was texting Gerard going, unmute me. I got something to add.
Well, you got the mic. You were next in line. I kicked you out. I don't know how that happened. When I hit the next button, you popped out. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, now I got something else to add. You know, when you pay a mechanic $125 an hour
mm-hmm.
for the mechanic, for the labor fee,
mm-hmm.
the mechanic only gets $25-$30 an hour.
Right.
That's my point.
And that's the way that works. But let's look at this. When I, as a
yeah.
contractor, I charge different for labors than I do for different other people with skills.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So people with higher skills, they get more money than the people with low. You know, we have in the construction field, we have what's called master carpenters. I mean, they're worth their weight in gold. And do they have master mechanics? And they
absolutely.
get a higher fee, right?
You got just guys that are just you know, A technicians, B technicians. They do
right.
A, B, and C. You know, so yeah, there's right. definitely levels. Electrical is higher.
And we all charge accordingly to those levels. And I've always have. So why don't the lawyers?
And they need an electrical technician. I'm not going to give the job. That's a job that you can't give to, you know, a what do you call it? There's a name for a journeyman that just like does you know, C work, like.
Yeah, well, carpenters have levels also, and then they get up to the master carpenter, and so. But anyway, okay, Jay.
Okay, so
what's on your mind?
My first point that I wanted to get in during the mask conversation is I saw a study where they put the air quality monitor behind the mask, and the air quality was so low that if OSHA had walked into a business and measured that air quality, they would immediately shut down the business and evacuate the building.
Is there a study that makes that thing on the are you talking about a study that actually took place? With air quality?
Yeah, well, they took an air monitor and they put it behind, and they slid the monitor behind the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And the air quality behind the mask was so low that if OSHA had come into a building and measured that air quality, they would have immediately shut down the business and evacuated the building.
Was this a certified study? Do you know?
I saw it on YouTube, you know, so probably not. It was just somebody checking, you know, look at this air quality behind the mask.
Well,
but
look,
that
if that happened,
but
let me make this point. If that happened by someone doing something like that, I'm sure somebody on a higher level that would do research, that's probably already been done also. Maybe Jody can find that information. Again, more ammo for her. And anybody else that needs it. Go ahead, Jay.
But going with the numbers that other guy gave about the oxygen, the carbon dioxide levels, I mean, that's just proof. The carbon dioxide levels behind that mask are so high that OSHA would
brain damage.
OSHA would immediately close that business down.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know how people wear masks. I can't last 5 minutes with a mask on. I mean, I just can't do it. You know?
Well, when I had to wear a mask, I've got this little face shield that basically clips behind my ears, and it's got a little chin rest, and it's this little face shield that only sticks up to my nose, and it's a plastic, like,
And the virus won't violate that the perimeter, right?
They were using them here.
Hey, by the way, Jay.
But if somebody made me wear a mask, that was my FU mask. Okay.
Okay, I got
you. That's not a mask. Oh, yes, it is.
I know. I saw people wearing those things, face shields.
Yeah. This wasn't a whole face shield. It just barely covered my mouth. It was, and people didn't even see it on me.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, you got anything else, Jay?
Was my FU mask, but no, that was, I was trying to get that in, going, hey, OSHA would close that business down if. So there's more ammo for her with her face mask.
Appreciate that.
All right.
That's it?
Yep.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah.
Say hello to Kay for me. See you later.
Hi, Kay.
All right, we'll take our next person. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Next question to the next person is Marianne. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Like, I don't know what's going on. Hold on 1 minute. Someone was just kicked out again, and I hit the next question.
Yeah, that
so
next question doesn't work.
I don't know who got kicked out, but you want to get...
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. I know that. You are the next person, though. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Who did that?
Who's
got the sticky fingers? Let me put the cue out there, huh? Sheesh. Okay, everybody's going to have to get back into the queue. And maybe that will refresh it anyway. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Let me take Jody for right now. But there's nobody else in the queue if anybody wants to get in there. Jody, you got the mic again.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
That was sneaky. You got right to the top of the line there. Go ahead, yeah.
I didn't mean to. Okay, so back onto my saga. So I had mentioned something about retaliation, and you think I can add stuff to this?
Oh, absolutely. You're okay, going to court now. You weren't in court before, and besides that, perfect. You were caught in an ignorant state, and now you're getting rid of your ignorance by trying to understand what's going on, and look at you also realize certain things that you didn't realize before. You're going into a court of law now. That's a different story now.
And this, the administrative judge denied this a part of my argument too. So in when I got my first discipline in April, I filed an ethics complaint. Well, I filed a complaint through the Inspector General, Executive Inspector General's office, stating that I had told the secretary that her mandate was unlawful, and then she retaliated against me. So they chose, the Inspector General's office decided they didn't want to touch that, and they transferred it to the ethics officer that's in the same department as the secretary. So I worked for DHS, so they sent it to the DHS ethics officer. He got it in May. He refused to do anything with it. Every time I would ask him by email, this is all documented in emails, every time I would ask him, you know, how long do you have to make a decision, he would tell me he doesn't give updates on referrals. So he refused. So finally in July, I got suspended again, and I filed another complaint against the secretary again through OEIG and asked them, please do not transfer my complaint because ethics is not doing anything with it. And I also filed a complaint against the ethics officer. So when I got suspended again in October, he still hadn't done anything with it. And OEIG once again transferred the second ethics complaint against my secretary and then also to him, transferred both of those to ethics again. So never did anybody do anything with my complaints.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take annual ethics training, you know. It's like a huge deal that we have to do. And so then you do it, and nobody even follows up on it. So in my discovery request, I asked if the secretary of my department, if she had communications with the ethics officer regarding my complaints. And the response that I got back was attorney-client privilege. He is the counsel to the secretary, so they could not give me information on if they communicated about my ethics complaint.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you have a good chance of winning a summary judgment right at the beginning of your case, because when you write your papers, you know, you're going to put some points down that they have to admit to, deny, or have no knowledge of. And some of the points are basically, you know, you want to make and you want to think this out. One noun, one verb in a sentence, that's it. And if you got 10 points you want to make of the same kind of subject, you make it in 10 different sentences. But the thing is they have to deny or acknowledge it. And one of the things you want to do is by what regulations they were applying against you. You know, the things we spoke about, particularly on regulations or where's the law, that kind of thing. You have to follow orders, but orders always come with regulations. You know, orders to do what? You know, again, get back to regulation. Look at any large company has policies and procedures. Okay, and everybody has a job to do, and certain jobs have more authority or more. Knowledge that they have to have, and they have to follow guidelines, and they're not to step outside those guidelines. But of course, logic plays a role with that too. You know, rules are made to be broken. You always heard that, and it's true. Rules are made to be broken sometimes because sometimes the circumstances calls for it, and that's just the way it is. It's called common sense. Unfortunately, very few people have that common sense that I've been dealing with in any businesses, and different people that I've been speaking to over the years. When they come up with, this is the way it is, again, rules are made to be broken, and they don't have, you have to go up the line, and usually what happens is when you go up management's line, you get with the people with that do have the knowledge of the realization that there's an exception to every rule. But anyway, that's where you want to get it. You want to be very careful when you put your papers together and make sure you put those points of questions, the facts of the case, and then you line them one at a time, you number them. We went through this not long ago on the course.
Right.
And we're probably going to review it again when we get to the anatomy of an IRS case.
You think that's something I can do on a review, an administrative review?
No, when you move into the court.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I don't know how that would work there with an Well, look, I've done some administrative arguments. I've recently had a couple of cases that I did for my daughter. And, and in that process of I wrote papers, okay? I literally wrote papers and submitted it just like a lawyer would do, which is not the norm for those people, but that's how I pursued my case and they accepted it. They may have thought that I was a lawyer. I don't know, but in any event, you could probably do it in that case too. Everything I have to say, I want to put on paper first. And if I didn't put it on paper, you got to be careful when you go into court because you really want to think things out. And if you object to something, and they say, well, what are you objecting for? And you can always say, I'm not a lawyer. I want to think this out. I'm going to respond on paper, but I object. And then the judge will have the opportunity to deny your objection, potentially speaking. But that gives you the time to sit down and think it out. So writing on paper is the most important thing. And that's why a case goes forward, it's a paper fight until you get to the trial. And that gives everybody the time. That brings justice. It's called, ultimately it's the due process is what it's called. It's the argument back and forth. And you don't have to answer the moment the words are spoken. You can answer 30 days or 20 days later because I need time to think about it. After all, I'm not a lawyer. And that would be my attitude. But I've never been denied the time to think about something. I'll respond in paper.
Well, I did bring that up. I don't know why I'm echoing you.
Yeah, I'm not hearing an echo.
You or I did bring up the retaliation, and I mean that they were maybe communicating with each other too. But also the secretary, she kept putting my Social Security number, my whole Social Security number, on my suspension paperwork, and she was emailing it to other people that I don't even know who they were.
That's a violation too.
Right, and they mailed it to my house unredacted, even after I documented emails, highlighted.
I would put that also. I'd be suing that person too. Bring that person into the lawsuit. And
we can't do anything about it in the Civil Service Commission. So I.
Yeah, well, you can do it in the court of law. You can get it. Look, no one's allowed to take your Social Security. Actually, you go to a doctor now, they want to get you fill out those papers, and they want your Social Security. I never put mine down. I'm not going to give it to them. And because it's none of their business, it's against the law for you to ask me for my Social Security number. But people don't know that. Huh?
It's against the law to mail it. She mailed it. They mailed it to my house two times. It got mailed by the state, and then they also sent it to the union, and the union mailed it to my house too. So the union had my Social Security number also. Yeah. So, and this is after I stated in emails, do not use my Social Security number on my paperwork, and she just because I'm the tyrant, I have to do whatever I want. So anyway, okay. Seeing what you thought about that, I guess
I think you have a good case. There's a lot of things you could do, and again, you're not going to win probably in the administrative side of things. Although it's a possibility if you really sit down and write a proper paper that really covers a lot of things and make these people think. Maybe there's someone with a couple of live brain cells out there. So
yeah, Okay. Thank you so much.
All righty. Okay. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? We only got one person left in the queue. Now we got two. Hey, Gerard, by the way, you want to take the controls here? Because I'm going to have to leave very shortly.
Sure.
I'll sit in the background. Just hit the next question. It should work now.
yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully.
Marianne.
Good evening. This is Marianne Malin, and I just wanted to add that I have a complaint that includes an affidavit by a Stephen Petty about environmental factors and maths and so on and so forth. That gets more into the air quality aspect of things and kind of, because the goal is to change the narrative from you must wear a mask to flipping it to, so what you're telling me is that the air quality is so bad in the building that you want me to wear a mask to protect myself from the air quality in your building? So, wow, it must be really dangerously toxic here. So we need to bring in OSHA. We need to bring in testing, air quality testing and everything. And wow, you're going to have to update your air quality engineering and all that stuff. So let's get on this, you know, let's bring in OSHA and have the air quality tested. That's what we need to start. We need to flip the script. So,
well, no government agency can require anything outside of written regulations and procedures, which ultimately is also connects to the, you know, the codes, which is statutes. But generally, regulations is the key thing. Any government agency has regulations that they operate by, so they can't do anything outside of that. That's the bottom line, and that's the key to winning that case, or any of those cases.
Yeah, but I'd be happy to share this complaint that I have that has the affidavit of Stephen Petty and all of
that. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Send it to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and if anybody wants a copy of that, they can request it from us, and we'll kind of send it out to them.
Okay, great, because I'm kind of dealing with, like, for instance, I do need to have possibly a medical procedure done. I call a doctor's office, and oh, you're required to wear a mask. That's our policy. And so, you know, I start with the, well, I have a mask exemption. Like, no, that's our policy. You have to wear a mask. So it just gets into this now, this whole thing with the system. Like, if you want to step into the matrix system, you have to wear a mask. And so
yeah, I know there are some places that are still requiring the mask, and there's not a requirement anymore. Huh? No. Yeah, but some of them aren't doing that anymore.
No, because the guys own their own place, and they're just not doing it.
Well, the mandate has been lifted, they say. That's that's what they told me. I'm trying to remember where I went with that, where they told me you didn't have to wear a mask anymore. Might have been the VA.
Yeah, probably.
But I'm talking about like UChicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, UChicago Health Network or whatever. They're still requiring masks to visit their offices, and we all know what that means. It's just about.
So the doctor's office is a business, right?
Yep.
Okay, so City of Atlanta Motel. This is a federal Supreme Court case. Has to do with commerce. People cannot be denied service if your doors are open to the public. So if you don't want to wear a mask and they're in business, you have every right to go in there. That's a federal Supreme Court case ruling. I believe it's the City of Atlanta Motel. Atlanta Motel. Look that up. You should be able to find
it. It's a U.S. case?
Yes, it is. It is a U.S. case.
Hey, why don't you drop that in the mail at National? I'd like to put that into my footnotes.
Okay.
So Atlanta Hotel?
Atlanta Motel. It was a racial thing, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it was race.
Yeah, I know if you have a medical problem, you know, again, it's a denial for that. And I can't believe they require children to wear it, too. It's just crazy.
But if you're looking for it, yeah, I know it's absurd. If you're looking for it, it will be. These people. This one business was denying. The motel was denying service to a black man or a black, or maybe even a couple. But anyway, the ruling wasn't about race. It was about commerce. That's what the federal Supreme Court said. It was about commerce. So that's what it is.
Yeah, I like that ruling. Send me a copy.
Yeah, I like that too. I definitely want to see that. John, I'm curious. So with these rulings that you would receive and you would have it in as a footnote, where would that be? Where would somebody find those on the site?
Footnotes?
Yes.
Oh, well, are you in a class?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll show you up here. If you go to Education Starts Here, you go over to the page for a table of contents, okay, mm-hmm. of our course. Then you come down. It should be right up front. We had footnotes. Let's see. Let me do a search real quick. Control, find, foot. There it is, footnotes. It's in Chapter 1. We did cover footnotes. Let's see. Let me just scroll up here a bit. So it would be Chapter 1, Essentials, Footnotes, okay? And if you click on the footnotes, you open up the zip file. Let's see if I can get that open real quick. Hang on a second. Okay, yeah, here it is, once it opens up. Okay, now, you know, when I put these footnotes together, and I don't know if I mentioned this during the course, I got to try to remember to mention this. You know, it's a lot of it is kind of just thrown in. I just keep throwing, you know, new things in, so it's kind of sloppy. And most of these are on notepads. They're not necessarily, Word, although sometimes I put a lot of information and I got a Word in here, so I'll use a Word instead. For instance, diesel therapy, I don't know if people are familiar with that, but it defines what diesel therapy is, and that would be a footnote if you had to talk about that. We have used that in a case because the federal prisoners are constantly go through diesel therapy. And diesel therapy ultimately is they put you in a vehicle and handcuff you, and they drive you all over the state, and then they change you over to maybe stop off here for a day, and then they put you back in the vehicle. You can spend weeks or months moving you around in a vehicle handcuffed. And it's called diesel therapy. It's really, these people are evil. So, but anyway, that's where all the footnotes that I have been gathering together over the years. And there's a lot more, you know, almost all my footnotes, not all of them, but almost all my footnotes, or most of them, let's say that way, comes right out of Black's Law. Okay, and I just wanted them at my fingertips, not that I have to go back into Black's Law looking them up all the time again. And then I just put a keyword or two in, to be able to find them quickly, you know. So, but that's where my footnotes are.
Oh, excellent! Thank you. And sure. I will send to you that complaint with the Stephen Petty.
Okay. Yeah. Send that to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org, and numerous people will get it. And anybody who wants to use it will use it.
Excellent. Thank you.
And if you request, hey, Eric, you're on the mail list, aren't you? You get mail. You may not be on. I don't recall seeing your name in there.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I get the stuff.
You get the mail, M-A-I-L, at National Liberty Alliance?
Oh, no. You know what? I do not. I don't. Yeah, no, I'm not on that list.
All right, I'll have to put you on that list. So when, for instance, if Mary Ann was to request whatever it is that you were talking about, that particular case, and you would see that, then you'd be the one to respond to that.
Sounds good.
Okay, so I'll try to do that tomorrow. I'll do that. If you hold off on your mail, Marianne, maybe 2 days, day after tomorrow, I'll get Eric in on that, because he's the one who'll have to respond. Or as a matter of fact, I'll tell you what, you just send it any time you want. Eric, send me the information. You're sending it to mail anyway, right? So I'll get it, and I'll send it to Marianne when what she wants or that information that she wants.
No, I was just going to drop it in your Skype, but if you want me to, I will.
Yeah, always send it to mail, because then all the other leadership gets it, and anybody else that wants to use it will have it too. So.
Oh, yeah, very good. Yeah, I am not on that list, so yeah, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Terry, can you put him on the list, or do I have to do that? Do you have access to that stuff? Okay, Terry's sleeping now, so we don't want to wake her up. Okay. Back to you. We're going to move to our next person because we are just about almost at the end of our program. Thanks, Marianne. You done? Okay, I guess Marianne is done now. Thank you, Gerard.
It was my finger. I couldn't stop it.
I'm leaving, so you got the mic. I got to go.
Okay, get out of here. See you later.
All right.
Hey, Terry, you're on.
Hi. Hey, you guys. My name's Terry. I'm in New Jersey, and I was just wondering, you know, I actually got involved heavily with a recall from Governor Murphy, and we know now that, you know, doing that is doing no good. We have to go the criminal level and go like the Liberty Alliance level to bring to light the corruption and just take them down the right lawful way. Mm-hmm. So I have a big following, and we were just wondering, like, we know that the state calls, I was involved somewhat with the California recall on Newsom, and I kept hearing stuff from my people from New Jersey who were out there. And we were just wondering, are there any weekly or even monthly or biweekly calls per state, like we would do like in New Jersey, because we're here in Jersey, or is just the training on the site just about it?
Yeah, this call is for everybody who's a member of National Liberty Alliance nationwide. That's kind of
So it's one big call. So it's one big one.
In other words, and we do it purposely at 9 o'clock because the people in California are 3 hours different. So you know, from 9 o'clock to 11 or 12 is, you know, easier, best one for everybody. But this, everybody's welcome to come in here, this open mic, and then you have access to it, our top people. John just figured that's the best way to do it. You know, a lot of organizations, you can't get to the top people.
Exactly. You know? And we're trying to find a good, solid, real, lawful organization, because we bumped into organizations where, you know, we're the real deal. We have no financial gain, personal gain, political gain. We're here just to make a difference and change the world, especially the United States, before it all collapses. And we're trying to find a group that actually does that. And I have a very good friend, Frank Cott, who actually introduced me to this. And then I just let it out to all my recall people, my Trump people, my political people. So, and they're like, oh, Terry, did you find something good? And, you know, I was trying to explain to them all, you know, let's check out this thing that Frank Cott told me to get on, and we'll just put our expertise and our skills and learn and go along with these guys.
Oh,
and Frank did mention.
Have you been on our site at all?
Oh, yeah. I've been checking it out. And you know what? Frank said, he goes something like, yeah, Terry, this is the best one because they've been around 23 years. He was just giving me a general high-level background.
Right.
Yeah, we just want to make sure we understand everything. And then this way, you know, because we'll understand it better. So now we have to become a member. Am I right? We have to, what is it, $50 a year?
In order to get, you won't get all the information that's on there unless you're a contributing member by $5 a month. I mean, you still get 90% of what's on here. You know, if you're not a premier member. But you won't get, you know, the paperwork and some of the other stuff, you know, that we give out, you know, without being a contributing member. And then, of course, the...
Well, let me pipe in real quick because I don't see the FM. I'm about ready to walk out the door.
Charge. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick. It's much more. You get like 99%. There's only one page that you don't get. But other than that, and a course, you know, we have a law course going on found under Education Starts Here. You come down to Court Access Common Law Course, you click on that, and you can have, and then you can fill out the application if you want to join that course. And that course is recorded, so it's an in-depth course on law and common law particularly, and the access, how to access the courts, how to procedures, what is due process, how it works, and so on. And the table of contents right here, again, those pages are for anybody that's in the course. The course costs $125, and it'll be available, you know, indefinitely. It'll always be there. Anybody who joins the course, it'll always be there, so you can go back and re-listen to videos and get all this information for writing your papers and so on and so forth. But you know, look at, if you're trying to do things, learn about starting a committee of safety, and we have handbooks here and tools right underneath Start a Committee of Safety. Click on handbooks, and we have a handbook on how to create a committee of safety, how to create a charter, you know, to take control of your county. Ultimately, it's called government by consent. So anyway, we have a lot of stuff. But with that, I got to
know what. And you know what,
but
you guys also, is it is the end goal like to bring back our grand juries to take out the corrupt governors, mayors, and the law? You know, all the corrupt de facto government. Is that the end goal? Like, what is actually the National Liberty Alliance mission?
Well, I think it's multifaceted because we're about education too. You know, we have established the common law grand jury in every state to one extent or another, and we want to have it in every county in the United States, and we want to get administrators to the court, you know, the grand jury administrators, and hopefully those will be paid position. We'll be able to use some of the money that they're spending now on the courts, and we're planning on actually taking that over. And administering to the juries and the grand juries. And so, that's the end goal. But also, we do a lot of education. You know, we're kind of a clearinghouse. And anything we don't know, we'll find out. You know, if you bring a question to us, you know, we'll tell you, well, we don't know. We haven't done that. But, we file cases in the federal court. We've done some indictments of federal judges that have broken the law. I mean, they're kind of just sitting there because, you know, nobody's paying attention. They don't want to know.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, because you know why? What stirred up New Jersey is me being so mouthy and slamming some people with the statutes, you know, for the child abuse that's going on in the schools. We were thinking maybe we could serve papers to the schools or the sheriffs to force the schools get a cease and desist letter and order them to dead stop, or they're going to have to undergo the maximum penalty of the law, which could be really a lot, and a heavy fine for child enticement, manipulation, stepping on parental rights. And I've been researching the national or the state and the federal statutes, and I have them, and I have spewed those out several times at the drag queen shows that we have to stand up in support and get against. We have to actually protest against them. We have to show strong support against them, which we do. But, you know, the schools, I mean, that was one of the frustrating things that we saw. We were trying to pick apart New Jersey, and New Jersey has so many, many, many flaws, so many. I'm surprised they're still allowed to be in the union, quite honestly. But we didn't know what way was the best to start with the corruption. And then somebody was telling us, oh, you guys, you know, just organized by county, because I know we had 21 counties, and we have, you know, I have people from the recall who can actually maybe get involved instead of doing just like we had the recall. I said, we need something more serious. And this certainly sounds more serious because you're one step closer to really the crime.
State up, we have, you know, district leaders, and any state can have county meeting. They can meet, you know what I mean, themselves.
You know, right.
And then, you know, the Monday night is to bring all that together, you know. And
I see.
Tell what you're doing, you know, out there. And the other thing, we just recently teamed up with this fellow, GR, and he's with Republic Review. And his website, he's got lots of documents John talked about earlier tonight, pre-made templates that you can use. And they used them in, I think it was Utah. The governor vetoed the new money law, and they were going to override him. And with his one of the papers that he had, one of the petitions, you know, this is a petition to the court. You know, you would put it in the court. And it basically said, you know, according to the Utah Constitution, the only money is gold or silver, and you know, and if you're gonna make a new definition of money, you're unconstitutional, and they actually backed off. So that's a good one, and so that's another resource that you can go to. So
So that's GR.
Yeah, GR with Republic Review.
Republic Review. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org.
I'm sorry, go ahead and say that, Eric.
ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. That's where you'll find GR stuff. And just, you know, it's just a matter of fact that Transvestite Story Hour, you cannot corrupt, in our culture, our common law heritage, you cannot corrupt minors. I don't care about statutes or codes or regs. You cannot corrupt minors.
Yep. And that's one of the frustrating things. That's like a common, that's a like a majority of the people I've dealt with throughout the recall. And, you know, Bill's with Murphy, Governor Murphy, and he's in violation of, you know, illegally harboring and abetting and supporting with taxpayer dollars all the illegals coming in. And we were trying to get him crucified with a, you know, with a recall. But then, you know,
that's
I realized
invasion.
That.
That's invasion, and that's high that. Treason, and that's punishable by death. That's invasion, which is high treason.
Yep, and I was trying to get him, and I really wanted to personally charge him. And for a long time, there were people from my biker club, actually, that filed charges against the 2A because of the restrictions. He thought he was just going to, you know, be puppeted with Biden and the rest of the Democrats and just follow the lead and act like, you know, I'm telling you what to do, whether you like it or not. So he filed charges. And the NRA, the guy that filed the original one on behalf of just himself for the 2A, he sits on the NRA board and he filed charges on that. And there's no outcome on that yet, but I'm just determined to trap him. You know, it's so sad that I have to say these words because I'm not that kind of person. But I realized that the criminal way, you know, that's the only way to go. And
yeah,
if that's what they really want.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and if that's what they really want, we're willing to do it. We have nothing to lose because they are very wrong because we've been living a very fake, false, fabricated life as it is.
Yeah.
It's a concerted effort all across the country, these sanctuary cities and bringing in. We have a problem here in Georgia with these massive developments and the city councils. Their eyes just go cha-ching, cha-ching with the developers coming in, and they bring in, quote, workers, unquote, and they're illegals. And they come in and they're saying, oh, well, it's okay because we wrote these codes and these rules and these statutes. And Terry, our Terry here in the leadership, she made an excellent point about the Rules Enabling Act and how we've made a switch to rules, and rules now outdo the common law. It's a great point that she made. Anyway, it's a concerted effort all across the country to overrun our social institutions. It is a communist plot, and you can get them in the state, and I think we can get them nationally too. But I'd rather just get them each at the state level, and I yield.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. That's really where we have the power at the you know, the county and the state, and the federal is too hard to.
Right.
You need a lot of people anyway.
Yep.
Very good. Nice to hear from you. And
Thanks so much for me babbling on and on. I have so much on my mind with the state.
That's fine.
And I'm persistent. I don't fear. I'm fearless, and I don't back down. And I right now I'm challenging some chiefs in our area that are trying to get us off property because we're being very vocal. And I have signs out down the street from Trump's golf course stating, "Persecute Bragg, hang Hunter, Pelosi for prison, outlaw liberals, hungry yet, broke yet, how do you like buy inflation?" So I'm just very, very, very persistent. I don't fear. And I told, you know, the law enforcement guys, I'm not here to harass. I'm here to educate idiots. And I know it sounds crazy, but I don't stop for nothing. Because if we have the backup of the constitutional law, hey, you know what? We have the real law, and that's they're at fault, and they've been guilty for decades and decades and decades.
Terry, are you in the legal course?
No, not yet. I haven't signed up for anything just yet. I just talked to Frank Cott because I was going through groups and trying to figure out where all my great patriots that came with me from the recall and all my political stuff down in Trenton fighting, where we should live and find a home to use our energy to push the United States forward and stop the corruption while we can before it disappears.
Come check out our course, the Court Access course, Court Access in the Common Law. I've been wanting John to do this for years. He's finally done it, and it's just dynamite. You should really check it out.
Okay, yeah, I definitely will because it's funny because I never thought I'd hear a lot of people say, oh, yeah, you should have been a lawyer, Terry, but I've learned the law just because I got spiteful against the people that are trying to destroy us. And I think that we've been all financially and emotionally raped. And they hate when I put that word out there, but that's what we've been. And I'm willing and ready to go all the way to the top. It doesn't matter. And face the enemy head on. So I'm
it's an ugly, it's an ugly word. It's an ugly word, but it's entirely accurate.
Yep. And it's so sad. You know, human nature is so hard to figure out at times. You just feel like, wow, you know, you would think the goodness of people. And then hearing about how they would just, you know, sacrifice children just for their political, personal, financial agendas. It's shame on them all. they are truly Satan's people, and I guess maybe Satan's people were plant seeded, and now they grew, and now they're right in our face. But it's, I just want to dead stop them. I'm tough. I don't back down, and I stand my ground, and I'm willing to go take a chance. And hey, you know what? I really believe we should start a, I don't know, I guess, is it the Federalists that started the, like, almost, say, so to speak, a We the People party? Is that what, you know, because really that basically says it, because they, Democrat and Republican, both are both guilty on both sides. So we should just wipe them out and get cancer out of the country all the way.
If you listen, if you're around, you listen, the parties, we need to get rid of parties, period. And just read George Washington's farewell address. You know, 50% of it was complaining about the party, saying that they would ruin the country. And that's exactly what has happened. So, you know, it's like you either get the criminal on the left or the criminal on the right. The
right,
party system is so corrupted at this point. I mean, we don't really need them. That was designed for control. It was a control mechanism.
Yep. And they had a person, they had a hidden agenda. And, you know, if they ever did need to classify people as they vote, I think it would be very, very wise to call ourselves maybe the Communist Party or the Constitutional Party.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Because then, you know how some families are like, oh, yeah, just do what your mother did. Just vote Democrat all the way down. And you never really, these people, it's amazing how many people, I hate saying it, but they're stupid. They're very ignorant towards educating themselves.
They're waking up,
you know?
Now. You know,
and I'm hoping and praying they are, because, you know, I have a feeling that the ones we deal with right now, there's a lot of people just not even facing us, looking at us. And it's sad to say, I had a cut, and it's so sad, I had to cut liberals out of my will, my family people.
Mm.
And just because I'm vocal, and I believe, and I said, you know what, quite honestly, you guys are part of my bigger problem that I'm fighting.
Right. Right.
You know, and they hate my sarcasm, of course. I was always a sarcastic kid, but hey, guess what? You know what? What I say is really true, and I have evidence to prove it. So it's not like I'm just making stuff up on the fly for them.
Yeah.
So we're ready, willing, and able to fight. And I got, you know, people, I'm with the bikers. So the bikers also, a few bikers here and there, they always want to get involved. And they've hit the top. And they just said, you know, where can we funnel our energy to make a real impact, and what can we do for our counties? So some of them are even meeting up with their own sheriffs right now. And
that too, with committees of safety.
Yeah, see, that's good,
listen,
though.
Welcome aboard and bring your friends with you. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely will. And actually, some of them are on the call right now, just so you know. So they're listening, because, yeah. And I sent the text out to a bunch of bikers, and I'm going to keep doing it. You know, I feel bad. I don't want to, like, rope them in and act like it's, oh, yeah, it's a sales pitch. I just want them to know it. Once I hear the frustration, I said, so, are you happy with everything in your life? What's, you know, do you want to make any changes? Oh, yeah, inflation's killing me. Oh, really? You want to get part of a, you know, a national alliance that maybe can help you funnel your energy and your anger through it and make an impact and make a difference for the rest of the country? And that's, we had actually... There's about 11 people, I would say, that we have had in just talking about this, just generally, and between ourselves.
Right, right.
I mean, there were some people at the diner. We said,
start a committee of safety. That's what you do in your community, and then you take care of problems in your community. And we got a lot on it that you could read about. And most people don't know what they are. The schools won't teach it because they don't want people to know those things. And actually, that's what the parties grew out of, was the committee of safety. And all the signers of the Declaration of Independence were members of the committee of safety. People don't know that.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Yeah, I never knew that either.
So it's a very traditional type thing. But look, we got to go. We're over time, and I want to get the last two people. So nice talking to you, Terry. And
yeah, nice talking to you, too.
Yep. Okay.
Take care, and I'll talk to you guys very soon. Yes.
Okay, very good. Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a great night, you guys.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Jay from North Carolina, how you doing?
Hey, Jerry, we were interviewed on the Power Hour radio show, and one of the hosts of the show's name was Josh. He said he has been researching the Constitution and common law for 6 years, and if he would have found our site 6 years ago, He could have saved himself 5.5 years of research.
No kidding, on the Power Hour. That's impressive. That's good.
Yeah, remember John was on the Power Hour and Josh said that?
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring that up.
It's the truth. Okay, thanks, Jay.
So check out the site, manipulate around the site. There's a lot on the site, but educate yourself, and that's what we're all about.
That's right. Thank
you. Have a good night.
Good to hear from you. Okay. Is that Ellie or Eli?
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have one question that I was thinking of earlier when you guys were talking about like the mask, for example, and these people, you know, breaking common law, trampling on our rights. And I get it through the Committee of Safety, and then we can get the sheriff to work for us, and we can kind of force the law on people through the sheriff. It seems like right now so many people will not comply with the common law until they have some kind of lien against them, especially in Hawaii and places where we have no sheriff.
Right.
It's like we're trying to get people to comply. We're trying to get people to be lawful, to allow us to have our rights. And they don't care to listen because we don't have no sheriff. We bark and we have no teeth. At what point? So it's like pretty much what I hear you guys talking about. It's kind of like the route we're taking nowadays is, oh, we're going to sue them. Like if we can prove them wrong in court, we can use the judge to make a suit. And then once they're proven guilty of something, if the judge will render a right judgment, which is rare to do even that far.
Well, we know we have to clean the courts out because the likes of George Soros has bought all these people right down into the town and county very hard. You know, it would be nice to get a grand jury to indict them because that's a little more serious. And then, you know, what are you going to do? You need somebody to prosecute them. And a lot of these prosecutors are not constitutional. That's why you got to have a constitutional shoot.
But I mean, so ultimately, in a place like Hawaii, where I'm from, where we have no sheriff, if we're able to prove that they broke the law, get a judge to render a judgment, which is already really hard to do, then these people have a suit against them, which if they cannot pay or if they don't want to pay, then what? The police come? So
first of all, they get taken out of office. The minute they're indicted, they're out of office anyway. So you've sort of accomplished your deal.
So you're saying that an indictment certainly means at any time, any indictment means any political office is voided. They're kicked out.
That's right. They can't operate. And so even if they prevail in the suit, usually by the time the suit goes through, you've already accomplished getting them out of there. You know what I mean? And there's other ways of getting them out, too, because most of these guys, they're not doing the right thing. They don't have their oaths and their bonds straight. They don't have their insurance right. They don't have their financial statements. And all of those things can get out of office. So we teach those methods, too.
So
we have bonds for the wins, the people with bonds for the wins. You know that? Bonds for the wins. They were demanding everybody's bond and their oath of office and stuff. And that's a big deal because...
How does this work? I'm still stuck on indictment. So an indictment means somebody brings a case against them. The case goes to court. The judge rules they're guilty, right?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
A grand jury gives an indictment. And all an indictment means is that they hear the case and they decided there was enough evidence to send it to a pettit jury. So there's got to be a trial. But once the grand jury indicts, that's, you know, it's usually a criminal thing, and they can't serve under indictment. That's just the fact. They have to.
So indictment means that they're about to be heard by a pettit jury. Is that what you said?
Right.
Right. They're going to trial, usually on a criminal case. So as long as they're under indictment, they're not, they don't qualify. Plus, you know, they can't, the bond company won't bond them if they're under indictment. That's a big one, too. So there's no insurance for them. And that's the other, you can get a lot of them out just by checking their bond, their oaths and their bonds and their financial statements. If they're not on
So that means if they're under indictment and they get sued, it's going to come out of their personal bank account. It's not going to come out of their
bond. It could come out of the bond if they did it during, in the course of doing their job description. But the bond company, if you're under indictment for a criminal act, they're not going to bond you. They're bound to drop you like a rock. So that means you're uninsured, which means whoever you're working for won't want you there, the municipality or whatever, you know what I mean?
I'm usually pretty sure that things are supposed to be a certain way and then they are not that way. So you're saying it's supposed to be that if a,
if
government official.
They're supposed to have their oath of office and their bond and their financial statement on file, and then if they don't, and a lot of them don't, but it's up to you to go and demand it from them. That's what brings it to the open. You know what I mean? They're supposed
oath of office, bond, and financial statement.
Right. And you can, and any elected official that goes for. So that's low hanging fruit as far as I'm concerned. You know. And if they don't have it in, then everything they did up to that point is null and void. Because they didn't really take their office then. It's really cool if you think about it.
You're supposed to just be able to demand these things and then they know that they have to give it to you?
They do, yes. And if they can't produce it, then they got so many days after you ask them. Go on the site and look up oats and bonds and bonds for the win. And we got a lot of stuff on that. All right?
Educate
yourself. If you got any questions, come back and on a Monday night again and ask us and whatever, you know, and if I don't know it, I'll figure it out. You know what I mean? We'll get you the answer.
Okay. I did have one more question, but I guess should I go back to the queue or what?
Actually, we're way, way over time.
What's the
question real quick?
Friend Xander, who I believe she comes on the call, she got in a scuffle with somebody. She had to pull her firearm. I don't know that she killed the person or even shot them. I don't know the case really well, but she was working a case for a long time under the whole Second Amendment. We have the right to defend ourselves. And I guess she went to one further, you know, court thing. And now I guess she's in jail. And so I'm like, I don't know how to get her out of jail or what to do or what do you do from here?
Yeah, you should come back on when we have more time. And, you know, you could do a habeas corpus. Or, I mean, I don't know what the particulars of the case are. I don't know if they got her for menacing or not.
I guess I would have to find out some particulars.
I can't really respond to that because I can't give legal advice. But sir,
is there any particulars that I could try to find during the week so that I can report back next week? That would help you answer the question?
It would help to know, you know, more of the particulars of the case. Did the guy get killed, first of all? You know, did she?
Okay.
What were the charges that they used to put her in jail with? That's important.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, there's companies that offer legal coverage and insurance when you have a firearm. I'm trying to think of the one that I have. I actually joined them because, you know, and you call, you don't say anything. You call them, and they have attorneys all over, and they're gun attorneys. You know what I mean? I wouldn't walk around with my gun without having that card in my wallet. You know what I mean? All you got to do is pull it out. Somebody sees it, and you're in trouble. Anyway, it's not easy, you know. But if she had to pull her gun, that means she feared for her life. I wouldn't pull mine unless I feared for my life. And that means that she's still alive. So, you know, even if she is in jail, she's still alive, you know.
Yeah, that's good. So.
All right.
I'll try and find out what her
charge is. Come back next week and give us some more information. I'll see if we can help you. All right.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, Bob Brew, you're our last. Yes.
Okay, thanks a lot, and I'll try to be brief. I wish we had another little part of NLA, and that's taking advantage of the precinct chairs for both parties, both Republican and Democrat. So many of those are, about 40% are empty across America. That's just a general rule. Most of the occupied chairs are appointed when they all should be elected. And anyway, we've had a big effort here in Texas, and we've filled like 1,000 chairs in the last 2 years. I personally have filled like seven, five of them in my county. And last Monday, we passed a unanimous resolution to get rid of machines and do paper voting in precinct on election day. So that is an actual party.
Wonderful.
Well, and it can be done everywhere. And utilize the systems of either party, doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat, to have connections via precincts where your committees of correspondence could be, and utilize the assets of each of the voters or even the non-voters in your precinct, which is nominally 3,000 people throughout America. They try to keep it that size for a precinct. We're growing here in Texas so rapidly that the last commissioner's court, we changed the boundary lines. And we produced three new precincts, so that's another 9,000 people just in a 2,000 or 200,000 person county, and we drew the lines to adjust. So basically, we're talking 3,000 people in each precinct, and each of those should have a chair, and each of those has a say at the bottom of the party. And actually, I had a guy over here today that actually had a big part in writing the platform for the Texas Republican Party. And I don't know. I have a There's so much we can do there, and I'm rambling on a bit, but we did get rid 2 years ago with a thing called Rule 44, where the third most powerful representative in the state was censured by all four of his counties, and he was forced to step down.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work, and they haven't been, because they're not elected. It hasn't been working like that. Like if they call on you member of the county committee instead of committee man, you're appointed at the first meeting. You're not elected, then you can be fired. And that's how they do it over here in the East Coast, anyway. You know what I mean?
Anyway, what we're trying to do is get everybody elected at the lowest level, the lowest, least of the lesser magistrates. You swear an oath. You have to uphold your oath. And if your oath is violated.
It is an elected position, yeah, and you do have to swear an oath. I don't know if people realize that.
And if anybody violates their oath, actually in our Rule 44, they have to violate their oath or violate the Texas Republican Party, for me, platform, three times in a period of 2 years, and they're subject to censure and removal. So it would be cool if you had, I'm a newcomer to the NLA. I've known about you guys for about 6 weeks now. Every time I go there, I just love it dearly.
NLA started out as the New York committee man. Do you know that? We push precinct.
So, and that's like a precinct chair, right?
Yeah, it was the committee.
Well, here in Texas, we call the precinct leaders, the party leaders, precinct chairs. So you call them a precinct leader,
county chair. Yeah, the county chair is the leader.
Yeah, he's over all the precincts, but right. he's equal to each of the elected.
Well,
I guess,
he's
in New York.
Over here, they're like a king, and they treat him like a dictator. That's the problem.
They
don't really let the committee men have a say. They don't let them really have a vote. They don't really do the what dang they're supposed to. So we started out, you know, with Tea Parties, and we started acting as the committee man, and we actually had candidates coming to us to get what dang because we got big enough that they knew that they had to make us happy. They were going to lose those votes, you know, in your counties and your towns and stuff. Elections are lost by not many votes, so they knew we were actually a force that they wanted to deal with, you know, when we got, you know,
yeah.
big enough. So anyway, it's all good stuff, and it just now that you're here, keep coming because it's all. Look, we got lots of ways to peel an onion here. You know what I mean? And
right. You know, and we had these precincts all over America. They're basically 3,000 people plus or minus, and it is, you know, an official elected position where you have to abide your oath. And most people don't know the oath to which they swore. So that's, you know, another thing that the NLA would be great for, you know, teaching the Constitution and the oath to which we swore. And one last thought, and I talked with John about this a couple of weeks ago, but the first sentence of U.S. law refers to those laws that no human laws should be suffered to contradict. That was Blackstone's phrase, but all of our founders knew it. And that's why it's on page one, the first sentence of page one, in the entirety of all U.S. law books.
Amen.
So anytime anybody violates the laws of nature, creation, or the laws of nature's God, the Bible, then they have broken their oath. And they need to stand.
Well, Bob, I hope you'll come back and continue to share how you organized, how you caused so much to happen in 1 and 2 years' time. That would really be nice to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. And I love you guys.
Thanks, Bob. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that, we're done with this Monday. We'll see you next week. God bless everybody, and keep your powder dry. Okay. Well, see you all next week.